Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fucking ears? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. We've done a lot of shows, man. We have been on for a long time. It's been a long time, folks. 800 and some odd shows. Where are we? I can't, like, sometimes I just keep moving. You know, I just keep going. I don't really, you know, pay attention to, you know, what's happened before or how I got here or what, you know, where, like, this is the 889th episode of this podcast, this bi-weekly podcast. 889. We're closing in on 1,000. We're closing in on 900. I've talked to so many people that sometimes I don't know if I talk to them or not. I just interviewed an old friend of mine, well, a guy I know from the Comedy Store, a comic. I can't remember. I didn't realize I hadn't had him on. He'll be on sometime in the future. But, you know, and it's like, why not? So I guess what I'm saying is, like, I'm going back in a little bit. I'm going to go make right. With some folks that that should have been on and that aren't. And these are usually comics that are out there working it. They're my coworkers. They're my comrades. They're part of the same tribe. And there's still plenty of them out there. And I just got to call them up. Like this cat, I ran into him the other night. I did a show with him. He's like, you know, you haven't had me on yet. I'm like, holy fuck, that's true. So I just texted him and come over. There was no big booking, no big, you know, entourage, no big, you know, movie star, anything, no junket, just old school. Come on by on Sunday. Let's hang out. We just had a great talk. But even today, Esther Pavitsky, little Esther, I've known her for years. And it was just, you know, sometimes the time wasn't just, the time wasn't right. I met her, geez, probably, I don't even think I'd started the podcast yet. I met her when I was, you know, just in the throes of being a miserable fuck. You know, at the end of my rope. She was a kid, it seemed like, at the Comedy Store. And I just remember telling her, like, yeah, what are you doing here? Why get out of here? It's gonna destroy you. She did not take my advice. And now she's got this wonderful little show on TV. It's a funny show. And I'm glad we waited, actually, to talk me and Esther. She's got this show, Alone Together. It's on, you can get it on Hulu. It's on Freeform, but I get it on Hulu. I was able to watch it. It was one of those things where, you know, she was coming on. It had been set up. And I was like, fuck, I don't even know if I can watch her show. And I'm like, hey, you can get it on Hulu. I asked her if she knew that. it's her and this other comic, Benji Aflalo. And I don't really know him, but I see him around. But I don't go back with him. Like, I feel like I've known Esther since she was a kid. Anyways, Esther's here today, and we had a great talk. So, what else? Like, I'm trying not to get emotional, it seems, with my big move. I'm detaching from the grief in some way because, like, my house looks totally different because I painted it, and I have cleaned the floors up and painted the outside. But I have not decided, really, in my heart, what I'm going to do with the house yet. I believe I'm going to sell it. But there's part of me that's sort of like, yeah, but maybe I should just have it around. Maybe I should rent it. Maybe I should use it as an office. I should probably sell it. Some of that, see, like, because I haven't committed to that fully, I'm still excited about the new place, but, you know, I'm loving it there, but I'm not letting go. I'm not letting go. And that's going to happen. That's going to happen soon. And I'll bring you along. I'll bring you people along for it. Okay. So yeah, I'm going to carry you people. Well, I'm going to, for those of you who choose to be part of it, I'm going to, we'll evolve through the grief together. I just wanted to read these two emails because they seem to have come together. They seem to work together. And I don't know if it's the right thing to read them for this one guy anyways. Subject line, how boomer, and in parentheses, almost found me love. Hey, Mark, I've been an avid listener since 2012. Thank you for making my commute not shitty on Mondays and Thursdays. Some of my personal favorite episodes include Dax Shepard, Romany Malco, and more recently, Marilyn Manson. What a strange and interesting dude. Anyway, a few months back, my girlfriend of 5 years broke up with me out of the blue. I'm 28, so after spending all of my mid-20s with the same girl, I was late to the online dating scene that so many of my peers have experienced and had luck with. I eventually made an OkCupid account, filled out the profile, dug up some semi-flattering photos of myself, the whole nine. After looking through countless girls' profiles, writing messages and having lots of uninspired conversations, I was finding the whole experience underwhelming and was about ready to throw the towel in. That is, until I came across Nick. She seemed amazing, beautiful, with a witty profile, good taste in music, and an affinity for spicy food. When I saw that she listened to WTF, I knew the perfect opening message to send. Boomer lives, in quotes. A few weeks go by, no response. I send a follow-up message about an art performance she mentioned in her profile, also no response. After another couple weeks, she finally wrote back saying, I don't know why this message got put into a weird folder. Hi, both of these messages are awesome. She then went on to talk about the performance she saw in greater detail and asked me a few questions. I was thrilled. I wrote back only to never hear from her again. During this time, OkCupid was going through policy changes about how users are matched when girls see messages from guys, etc. I think this had something to do with what took her so long to come across my initial messages, and like to believe that she never saw the later one. This girl seems like the real deal. If this email ever got read on your show, I know she'd be listening. So if you could please help me out, Nick, go back online and find Alex's profile and messages. He's the dude with the shaggy brown hair who drinks a lot of seltzer and doesn't watch football. Thanks for all you do, Mark. Boomer lives. Alex. This is a kind of a long email, and you know, maybe I don't know what happened. I'm not here to make matches. I'm not here to help people out with their dating. I don't usually do this. And maybe this woman is just sort of like decided, maybe she's moved on. Maybe there's any number of options. But I just thought it was nice that people who know the show, you know, are getting together around the show, and I'm worried about this guy. Like, I don't want him to tip over into like sort of like, I don't want him to get obsessed. I don't want him to go nutty. You know what I mean? I think this was, you know, this was there was a nice line here that, you know, he's just hoping for the best here. He's hoping for the best. Doesn't seem like, you know, he's losing his mind. If he gave me all the information, you know, maybe, you know, it's a little desperate. I feel for him. Maybe this will work out. I don't know. I don't, you know, I hope I'm not exacerbating a situation that just wasn't meant to be. But couple emails after that one, I get this. Officiant of a wedding. Hi, Mark. I wrote and erased the first line to this email a good 10 times because I have no idea how to tell you that I'm a fan, but I was just asked to officiate a wedding of two friends of mine that are huge fans of yours. The reason I didn't know how to word it was because I don't want you to think I'm not a big fan, but that these two, especially the girl, are really big fans. I wanted to get them something great for their wedding, and I was wondering if you would send me a letter giving them advice or anything, and I will frame it and give it to them on their wedding day. If not, that's okay. Now you know two huge fans of yours are getting married to each other. Their names are Kate and Kyle. Thanks, Mark. Jay. Kate and Kyle. Advice for being married. Look, you know, maybe this is giving my last email guy, you know, too much hope to Alex. I don't know, but this is again a unique thing, and I don't know that I'm the guy for marriage advice. I mean, I'm glad they like my show, but if they like my show, they also know that I have not been successful in two marriages. I was engaged, that didn't work out. Most of my relationships have done nothing but harden my heart and made me cynical and defensive I don't know. But the relationship I'm in now is good because, you know, we're both independent. We mind our own business around some things, and we have mutual respect for each other. She does a different thing than me. I respect her work. She respects my work. We get along. She's not the usual type of person. Our crazies don't mesh into one big crazy. We are uniquely crazy. We're crazy in different ways that don't have the same sort of destructive effects on each other. And but like I'm a little I'm scared of marriage, so I'm not sure this is the right advice. I don't see any reason to be married again, so good luck. just try to work through stuff before. Here's the only advice I can say, and I don't always heed it. Try to communicate and work through bullshit before it gets all consuming and is too late. Do not let resentments fester to their point of malignancy where you can't get back to where you were when you had the love. Try to communicate, and if things feel wrong, try to talk about it before reacting to it without letting the other person in on it. If you're having a problem with the person in your mind, you know, share it so you don't just react to it in your mind and that escalates and they have no idea what the fuck is wrong with you. Does that make sense? But congratulations, Kate and Kyle, on your upcoming nuptials. And good luck, Alex, in tracking down the elusive Nick. But don't, you know, just let it be. If she doesn't get back to you, let it be. All right? Just don't cause trouble. So Esther Pavitsky is very funny and very interesting, and I haven't talked to her in a long time. And her new show, Alone Together, new episodes are Wednesday nights at 8:30 on Freeform. It's already been picked up for a second season. You can watch it on Hulu. But this is me talking to Esther, and it was very nice. Does it make you queasy, like green tea?
No, green tea doesn't do any of the bad stuff to me.
But no, I mean, green. Like, what is the other bad stuff?
Well,
oh, you mean the caffeine,
the
thing.
Mania, and then the crash.
But don't you get nauseous when you drink it with nothing in your stomach?
Well, I don't do that, And I usually drink it with. I mean, I haven't had a coffee in so long because I'm trying to avoid this crazy high thing.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm like, I don't even take Advil. I've never tried alcohol or drugs. Like, for me, caffeine is such a huge, it's a huge deal for my system.
Yeah, I stopped drinking coffee. I did.
Wait, what do you do now?
I'm drinking black tea, but it's just not the same. I stopped drinking coffee because I was drinking like two or three pots a day.
And what did it do
just,
to you?
Well, eventually you just tap out. You just get nauseous.
How do you sleep?
It's weird because my tolerance was so high, I was not having that hard a time sleeping. And I would drink it on the way to the store. I would drink like a fucking big old cup of coffee at 8 o'clock on my way to the comedy store.
Wait, you know what's crazy is like when I hear you say that, I'm like, that's so romantic to me.
Really?
It's like so cool and edgy. Like I drink black coffee at night. It's like I don't need a gross meal like the rest of you. Oh, I want to be that person.
But then I'd eat later. Yeah, I mean, that's edgy. Boy, things have really changed. You're not running with a fast crowd over there.
No, I said I've never tried alcohol or anything. I'm
seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
All right, so. Well, no, I mean, I believe you. I have no reason not to believe you. I just like, I don't know. When did we first meet? How long ago was that?
That was in 2009 when I first started stand up.
So it was right. Store. Really? It was that long ago? That was like right when I was starting this. So I was in
you
a weird place.
You hadn't started this yet. You were like.
In trouble.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say it, but yeah, like you were someone that me and the other comics there really looked up to and idolized, but you were also like kind of, you know.
What?
On your way down.
You guys are just watching me spiral?
Yeah. Well, just like, I don't know. I think when you're at the comedy store, it's hard to look up to this was the culture there that I, like.
Well, let's be specific about that. So 2009, when I sort of like, I try. So it was before I started this in the garage, or I hadn't done any.
You had some kind of weird online talk show, but it was not this.
So it must have been early 2009.
It was. You were living in New York, I think.
Right. Going back and forth. So it was towards the end of, right, we hadn't quite started it yet.
Yeah.
Because this started in earnest in 2009. Oh, so I was like.
You were, yeah.
Just sort of like miserable and out of my mind and full of panic and darkness.
Yeah. And like I said, like it was hard for those, the darkness of the Comedy Store, they don't, the youngins there don't worship the people on top. They kind of worship like the gritty person, and that's who you were at that time.
the guys that never quite did it.
Yeah.
But were integrated into the mythology of the store.
That's right, yeah.
Right, because at that time, the store was being run by a new generation of maniacs.
Yes, there was, I would argue that no one was running it.
Right, it was just chaos. It was before Peter Shore kind of cleaned things up. And,
yeah.
And, but it, like, it was, who were the door guys? Was that, what Ari was a door guy then?
No, no, that was before me. It was, I mean, I don't know if it's people you know, but like, Tony Hinchcliffe was a door guy.
Well, you were dating him, I think, when we met.
Yes. Well, we had like, we were kind of starting to have a thing.
Right.
But you actually gave me really good advice.
I thought, like, I was thinking back on it and I feel like I misled you.
What do you, really?
No, no. I mean, like, because I thought, like, you know, I remember, you know, giving you a ride somewhere and telling you, like, you know,
get
out of the store.
Yeah, you gave me good advice. You said, go to UCB. You don't belong here. This is a bad place. This is dark. You're not this. Go to UCB. And I knew that you were giving me good advice.
Yeah.
And it was the right advice. And like, I had known that advice before. And
I
just didn't take it.
I know, but that's impressive because you hung in there somehow and you're doing very well and you hung in with those monsters.
I think maybe that you didn't see the darkness in me
that
was
must
really
have been
there.
It.
No, I don't know what it was. I don't know. But like I said, you did give good advice and I did put up with a lot of shit that I probably shouldn't have had to put up with when
so,
I was there.
So I gave you a good warning.
Like, yeah.
But you must have kind of known it.
Yeah, I did. Of course I did. I mean, I only wandered into the Comedy Store because it was a comedy club that my dad said he went to in the 80s and that some bar owner said I could do stand up there. And then I just really liked it. You
yeah,
know?
Well, it's got a charm. But,
yeah.
But you seem to be fortunate in that whatever your disposition is, there are certain people that, I don't know, like I notice it in your act and also in your show that you're just not going to be taken down by that bullshit.
No.
I don't know, you have some sort of emotional insulation that enables you to seem sort of like wide-eyed and innocent but and move through these hellscapes.
Yeah.
But like it reminds, like Sarah's a little like that, Silverman, in just in the sense where she was always around all of us, but it was just like she was always never going to be, you know, kind of jarred by the garbage.
Right.
You know what I mean? She rose above it sort of effortlessly.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you have that too, though. Like, you have the darkness.
Yeah, but
maybe not the wide-eyed.
No, I've been beaten by it a few times. Like, I took my licks. I didn't rise above anything.
Oh, my God.
It just, over time, I got old and things started to happen and I felt better about myself. But there was no rising above. If I was there during whatever that evolution was, during the Rogan-dominated years, you know, during the
that
sort
was
of
before me.
A little before you, yeah. Which I wasn't. You know, I wasn't really around for that. Where, you know, you had these weird fights and Mitzi was still conscious and
right.
You know, Caparulo was doing a half hour sets and there was fighting between certain factions at the store.
So, yeah, that's the stuff I heard about when I got there. But by the time I got there, Rogan was banned and Mitzi was still, I would say in the first 2 years I was there, she showed up three times, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good. No.
Yeah, she wasn't as terrifying as she once was.
Yeah, and we'd stay there till 3 or 4 in the morning, and it was just like.
Who was your crew? You and Tony.
It was Dan Madonia, and Benji was there sometimes, and I would stay late with like Don Barris, and it was.
That's right. You, see, that was why I was sort of concerned. You were part of that whole weird late night Don Barris, Brody Stevens parade of weirdness.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but it did. And I remember my parents would tell their friends, oh, she's doing comedy. She's out till 4 a.m. every night. And that their friends would be like, your daughter's on drugs. And they'd have to be like, no, we know she's not. But no one believed us.
But like, I don't even, I never stay at the store that late because something happens around 11.
Oh, yeah. No, now I would never. Now I'm like, I'm up at 8:30 and I'm gone and in bed by 10. I think that that damaged me so much. Like living that lifestyle my first year or two in comedy where I was out till, I was at the store because I was obsessed with the store. I was there at 9 when the show started, whenever it was. And then I would stay till 2, 3, 4. And then I would sleep all day and then go nanny or whatever job I had that at that time. And that was so, became so depressing. Like going to Subway at night at 4 a.m. It just like really takes a lot out of you.
But you're the real deal. You loved it. You wanted to live at the store. But because of that, you now kind of go up with confidence. You understand it. You're part of the place. I mean, it's a very specific place.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back. So where'd you come from?
Skokie, Illinois.
Skokie.
Yeah.
That's like kind of dark Illinois. No? Why do I know that name? Isn't that where the Nazis marched?
There was a Nazi march there.
That's what it's famous for. But that was a long time ago.
That was before my time. But yeah, it's a very like diverse community. Yeah. It's a suburb of Chicago.
Oh, it's not it's quite close to Chicago?
Yeah, it's very close. I grew up on the border of Skokie and Evanston. It's not quite a nice suburb though. You know, it's not a shithole.
It's not Highland Park?
It's not Highland Park. That's right.
But are you Jewish?
I'm half Jewish.
Half Jewish?
Yeah.
Your dad's Jewish.
Yeah, my dad's Jewish. My mom's a very quiet Finnish woman. Very nice. Was a cheerleader in high school. She's just so normal.
And your dad is what? A bombastic Jew?
Yes. Just a Jew. And it's really...
Just a Jew. You know what I'm talking
about.
A
Jew. With lots of problems and personality.
Oh, really? Like, what'd he do?
Oh, he was a compulsive gambler for
a long
time.
Oh, that's great. Good.
But we're very close now.
Did he get recovery? What did he do?
He was always in GA, but yeah, he's been clean for a long time now.
You got brothers and sisters?
I have a half older sister from my mom's first marriage.
Oh yeah?
And she's like very normal. She's a single mother of two and lives in Illinois.
Uh-huh.
She's also quiet.
Really?
Yeah.
So your mom is just a passive kind of... Like, are they still married?
They are still together. And I explain them as like a toxic combination and not in a bad way, just that like they just make no sense to be together. It's just weird.
I don't know. Is it like sometimes like I've noticed that there are people who kind of would rather just be with somebody who was high maintenance and full of energy. And then they don't have to engage much. They just watch that person spin around and they help out a little and try to guide a little bit and hope that they don't get caught in the crossfire of whatever that person's going through. But it enables them to not engage emotionally.
Oh, and that sounds like a dream partner for me.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Like, I just notice it because my mother seems to find herself with men that spin around. And because of that, it took me a long time to realize she does not have to expose herself emotionally that much because they're so fucking needy.
Right. I just did a show where I talked about my parents and they...
Talked about them?
Yeah, I talked about how I was...
On TV?
Yeah. Well, I guess the internet. I feel like I was watched, not raised.
Uh-huh.
And they...
Right.
They, which is so real. Like, they kept me safe, but they didn't, like, engage.
Yeah, because they're self-involved, right?
Yeah. My dad was... I don't know. But then my parents called me after that aired and they were like, oh, we're so sorry. We didn't hang out with you. They just totally made fun of me for it. And I feel like maybe I upset them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They made fun of you, though, for it? Because my parents at this stage, when I do stuff like that about them, they're like, my mother's like, I'm sorry. I really didn't know that that's what was happening.
I can't believe they take you seriously.
I'm very serious.
That's cool.
Have you ever watched my comedy? It's all real. I'm not hiding behind much. But I think that that's an interesting observation that you were watched but not raised.
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah, because they're worried about certain things that make them nervous. But this is my parents. Like, they were worried and panicky, but it was only how it would affect them. They had no ability to really nurture or guide.
Yeah.
So I'm just sort of left to my own devices to wander the world looking for an identity.
Yeah. And like watch TV and try to find attention from something.
Watch comics.
Yeah.
Look at people with stronger personalities.
Yeah.
Kind of lock on.
Yeah. That's so real. Yeah. Because I always feel like strong women have such a profound effect on me. And I think it's because I'm seeking that out from having like a quiet
sure.
mom.
Which is, or just having like, you know, it's, I think innately you're like, they seem to be able to handle life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll go hang around with them.
Yeah. I would be the perfect like cult. Sub or victim. I don't
know. But that's the funny thing about you is that maybe you would, but I don't think so because there's something deeper that allows you to protect yourself from it. Because being that you had this attraction to the store, that is sort of culty because it's a very specific thing. You know, because when you tell people, like, I love this place, and they're like normies, they're like, why? Do you know, like, when I was there, like, and I'd have like a woman come out and visit me and hang out for the weekend, and I was just up in that house doing drugs with a bunch of gypsies and weirdos, and I was like, isn't this great? And they're like, no, no one wants to live like this. I'm like, you don't know.
Yeah, it is weird. Like, why did I like staying till 3 a.m. when there was three people in the audience and like doing...
It's the best.
Yeah, I know. It was very magical.
That's the best when, like, it's just, like, and they're all sitting in different places.
Yes, they're scattered. They're so scattered.
The scattered nine. I don't know, because it's, like, it's a completely unique experience and place that nobody, it's as far away from normal as you can get without breaking the law.
Yeah. Yeah, and also feeling like you're doing the thing you want to do. Because for me, that represented comedy. And it's like, yeah, this is chaotic and definitely unprofessional. But it was still felt like I was on the path I wanted to be on.
Well, and you obviously bought into the idea that this was the path. Mm-hmm. That there was no... See, that was something I probably didn't take into consideration when I talked to you because I didn't know you. Is that you had already bought into the program at the store.
Yeah.
So you're in Skokie, but you know what's interesting to me is that you had these passive parents or parents that were, you know, that would give you stuff and were protected, they were providers, but not necessarily emotional guides or anything else. Yet somehow or another, you ended up okay. Like you know, I've noticed that, like, cause you could go either way if you have that liberty, but they must have implemented enough guilt or something in you to where you didn't get all fucked up or...
Not guilt. Guilt was not a part of our game. But I think that my family, a part of the, like, kind of what I explained earlier, like, it wasn't like they were parents. It was more like everybody was equal.
Yeah, that's what I say about my parents. It's like,
really?
They're people I used to do a joke like, I don't really see them as parents. They're just people I grew up with.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, I feel like everyone in my household was an equal and had equal say and all this stuff. And so I think from that, there is still like a familial relationship, of course. And like, I don't know, I felt close to them because of that. And I obviously had to work hard to get close to them because sometimes they didn't want to hang out with me. And so it was just, I don't know.
But let me ask you this just out of my own curiosity because of my experience. Like, I don't look at them as parents, really. I know they're my parents, but I would never ask them for advice or like ask them to.
But who asks their parents for advice? That's so weird to me.
Some normal people respect what their parents' judgment and stuff. Like, I do not have that. You know, like I, you know what? My dad would know the best thing to do. It's something I would never say.
I see them as, like, now I see them as their family, but it's also, like, a friendship. And, I mean, I love being around them now because they're just so funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I'd ask for advice.
Well, how did the gambling manifest itself when you were younger?
Just gone a lot, like gone to Las Vegas a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he was out, he wasn't working the phones, calling bookies. He was out in the world doing it?
Yeah, yeah.
So he'd go on benders to Vegas from Illinois?
But I didn't understand the concept that they were benders because he would just come home and then I'd get a bunch of toys, like, because he'd bring stuff from the gift shop. So to me, it was all fun and games.
He'd bring you a bunch of gift shop toys, but he'd have to sell the car? How bad did it get?
I think that he, from what I understand, he was left money by his, because I grew up in the house he grew up in. His parents died before we came around. And from what I understand is he was kind of left some money and then that money went away.
Oh, got it. Yeah, sure. Like he wanted to make it bigger and it got smaller.
Maybe.
And it was your half-sister growing up in the house with you all?
She was.
How much older is she?
7 years.
Oh, so that's wild.
Yeah, but she was, you know, very cool, and without being offensive, she wasn't half Jewish, so she was very pretty. And so she was the cool, tall, skinny, pretty, big-boobed older sister who didn't want anything to do with me.
So that's that. Well, that seems to be an important part of your persona.
I
you
think
should
it
thank
is.
Her.
Yeah.
For it. It seems to be your struggle.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, why didn't you get the other side of the genetic layout?
Yeah, because the Jewish genes really dominated.
Oh, it's not so bad.
It's okay. It's okay. No, I'm lovely.
Wait, okay. Is your dad short?
No, he's not. My dad's actually really tall, but I ended up short.
His mother must have been short.
Somebody, yeah, I think the women. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But because I watched some of the show. What is it? Alone Forever?
Alone Together.
Alone Together. I watched it and it was funny.
Oh, thanks.
Because there's a sort of detached groove. But I found it kind of emotional too. Do you know, like, I imagine it's intentional, the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
I think so. I don't know what tone you picked up on, but it sounds like, yeah.
Well, just that your rapport, like, you're both kind of, you know, and I don't know if it's a millennial thing or what, that there seems to be an emotional detachment about how you engage and how you go at each other. Like, Benji seems like everything's, you know, kind of a conversation. You always have something witty to say. You're always sort of cutting each other down.
Yeah, I think what you mean, well, because he says mean stuff to me and it bounces
all the time
off me. And
yeah.
That's real and intentional. Because that's like I said, I was kind of teased by my parents. And so for me, when someone is mean to me, that's loving and shows that they get me and understand me and are, you know, they know me.
So your parents were mean to you?
They teased me. This is like, it's so fucked up, but because it's kind of offensive. But when I was growing up, my family teased me because they thought I was gay.
Yeah.
And they called me Andrew Cunanan. And like,
what does that name mean?
He's the guy who killed Versace.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But so I was, they teased me.
A lot? Your passive mother? Your quiet mother?
No, my mom was just quiet.
So
my dad and my sister, they would make fun of me. But I don't, like, it's weird because back then you would tease someone for being gay, and now you wouldn't. I hope you wouldn't, but that's kind
of
what.
There are plenty of people that still do that.
Yeah, that's true. It's really horrible.
Yeah. So, okay, so they would tease you, but you learned that was
funny.
A sign of affection.
It was affectionate and it was
it
funny.
It hurt you and you laughed.
Exactly.
That's not
Bingo.
Great.
But it shows that they, like, oh, they know something about me, so they know how to make fun of me. So that's good. They know me.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's other ways to get an emotional connection. But, you know, I know that I have that. You know, I feel like I'm just trying to relate because I think we have similarities that, like, you learned that because I do that too. It's easier to do that than to just be, if you're that type of person, insecure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's easier to get emotional reactions by being mildly hurtful than it is to be like, we're proud of you, we love you.
Yeah, in fact, like, when my parents say that kind of stuff now, it's weird. I don't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
Yeah.
It's like, don't give me that shit now.
Yeah, yeah. Or like hugs.
Yeah, just be...
Hugs feel weird. But you must like it, because when we first started this conversation, we talked about how you were like on your way down when we first met, and you enjoyed that.
Mm. I know. I didn't enjoy it.
Oh, you enjoyed when we talked about it.
Well, that's because I didn't go. I'm here.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had followed that trajectory that, you know, this would be a peppy conversation.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, I'm glad I made it out.
Yeah.
But no, I like hearing about that stuff. I mean, I'm always surprised when people, you know, there's certain parts of my past where people are like, oh, you were like this. And I'm like, oh, that's terrible. But I do laugh at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always think I have more impact on people than I really do, because I'm always worried that, you know, like, I did something. But everyone seems to be like, no, we knew you had problems. We didn't get too involved. You know, we saw you, but we stayed over here. You know, But so okay, so the dynamic with you and Benji is sort of genuine. But like I wasn't being critical of it. It's just there's a unique dynamic because it's funny and you both understand each other, but you're both sort of completely self-involved, mm-hmm. you know, in a way. But it's sort of sweet, and you know, I got a little emotional at the end of one of them with the little kid. But I'm kind of emotional. I'm kind of menopausal or something. Everything's kind of moving me. But with the little kid and you know, when he kicks Benji.
Yeah. Oh, you watched that one.
And your little West Side Story dance. How many are there? There are 10?
There's 10 episodes, yeah.
So, like, what is Freeform? Like, when I first started looking for it, I'm like, where is it?
It's a channel on TV. It used to be ABC Family, and they renamed themselves.
Right, but I'm like, I have Hulu. Like, I pay for Hulu, so I'm like, I can watch it.
Oh, yeah. It's our show is on Hulu.
So. Right. So I'm like, okay, I don't need to know.
Yeah.
What it is.
I know. It makes it so easy that it's on Hulu. It's really great.
It is.
Yeah.
Is it on regular television?
Yeah. Freeform is regular TV. So it airs on Freeform every Wednesday. And then the next day, the episodes go live on Hulu.
And you got picked up.
Yeah. We're writing the second season right now.
So ABC Family. So they must have changed their kind of attitude.
They sure did.
I can't see this as being a family show.
Well, yeah. Because when we had our pilot episode, when we sold it to them, it was about an escort, and we were like, okay, I guess we have to change this, and they're like, no, that's fine. So we were very surprised.
They were taking chances.
I think we're the first Disney escort show.
But do you stay an escort?
No, I don't. It's only the first episode.
The second episode, right? Or no, I guess the first one.
Yeah.
But it looks like you got a lot of good guest stars, people from the store, big actors, Denise Richards.
Yeah, Chelsea Peretti, yeah. Bobby Lee, big store fixture.
But you asked me to do it, and I was like, eh.
I know. It's maybe season two. We'll see.
Yeah, you still want me to do it?
Yeah. Why wouldn't I? Yeah.
It depends what you want me to do. What did you want me to do last time?
Last time, well, I shouldn't say, because I don't want people to have that in their heads when they see.
Oh, was it for this season? No, it was for last season, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
but people are going to see that person and
we'll do it off mic.
Yeah.
All right, so you're in Skokie, you're in high school. Are you like, do you have friends?
Yeah.
You're normal.
Yeah, I had a boyfriend and friends.
What kind of boyfriend? What kind of car?
Whoa, what a question. He had a good car.
Yeah.
I shouldn't talk about him because I'm like, I'm kind of still obsessed with him, even though I've moved on and I'm in a serious relationship. But he's like blocked me on all social media and like seems like he wants nothing to do with me.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of nowhere?
Well, you know, it's never out of nowhere.
You talked about him on a thing.
No, I didn't. But I was like texting him when I first moved out here because he broke my heart. You know, he cheated on me, dumped me, and then like fell in love with someone else. And when I moved out here, I kind of got the confidence because I was at the store and I was all cool.
Yeah, the dark confidence.
Yeah. And so I...
the dark magic.
I started reaching out and was like, hey, like, what's the... like, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. And he just was like, I don't want to hear from you and I don't want to talk to you. And then he blocked me and on all the things that you can block a person.
Wow. So that was years ago, though.
It was.
What kind of car?
It's so specific. He had like his grandfather's yellow Mustang.
Really? Yeah. Like from the 60s or 70s?
70s, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Like a metal one, like a good one.
Yeah. Why do you ask what kind of car? You must just be into cars.
No, not really.
Oh.
Just curious, trying to paint a picture of high school you and your dude.
Yeah.
In a yellow Mustang, old yellow Mustang, a vintage yellow Mustang.
Yeah, I guess that was cool.
Pretty specific,
mm-hmm.
Right?
And then, but he was a year older, so then he went away. And then my senior year, I was by myself. But that's when I got really close to my family, because like every Friday after school.
Yeah, what kind of car they have?
I'm driving it to this day, a 2001 Toyota Camry. It's my car right now.
Those are great cars.
I know.
I have a Camry.
Really, I never want to get rid of it.
Oh, it's so good. Like that. So I can't picture 2001. I had a fucking 95 Camry back in 2004. And it was great because they were made by the same company as Lexus. So there's very little difference between the Camry and the Lexus at that time.
Yeah, people say that I have that car for attention because it's so awful, but I like it. I think it's a good car.
Were they still big then? Like, cause
yeah,
Camrys
it's big.
Got smaller.
Yeah, it's still bigger. I mean, yeah.
Like in the 90s, the Camrys were like a luxury car almost, it felt like, the one I had. It was a big gold one. Bought it off the schizophrenic guy.
Oh, I think I'm one body generation past that.
No,
one.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So you still got the family car.
Yeah.
Why don't you buy it? You don't want to?
I decided I was going to buy a new car last year, and then I was so overwhelmed and couldn't pick out a car. And I'm like, my car's fine. Forget it.
I get overwhelmed easily as well. Like, the fact that I'm having this work done on the house is just testing every part of me.
Do you live here?
I'm not living here right now.
Right.
You know, but the garage is obviously still perfectly intact.
Everything, it is.
Yeah. And I don't know what I'm going to do. I moved. And, you know, it's historical. I get it. You know, but I don't know what I'm going to do with this house. There's no big urgency or plan.
Oh,
I don't know if I'm going to keep the garage. I'm like really on the fence about everything. I'm ready to set up at the other place, but there's still part of me that's sort of like, but this is the one. This is the garage.
Are you like a hoarder?
What? No.
Well, because that's a hoarder's mentality is, I can't get rid of this. It has this meaning. And oh, no, I need it.
Uh-huh. No, but I mean,
you seem surprised by that.
But I'm not collecting houses.
No, but
I think what I'm experiencing is a natural, real, reasonable kind of connection to a place that I've been in a long time. I mean, like, if I couldn't throw away all of these books and boxes, then you'd have an argument there. Like, the argument, like, I can't wait to go through this stuff so I can just throw it away. I'm in a place where I can throw things away, and I believe that I can.
But people, I know there are some people that could just walk away. I'm like you. I'm very sentimental. I lived in the same house my whole childhood. Like, I love going back to that house. Yeah, I don't like leaving.
Yeah.
I don't like getting rid of places or things. But I also am the same way with things. That's why I asked. But I'm not a hoarder, but I have a hoarder's mentality where I can't let go of stuff.
Do you have a lot of stuff?
Not a lot.
Not anymore or ever?
No, it's not a lot, but I have things that are like the theater t-shirt I wore in high school. It's like, why? I don't need that.
I have so many t-shirts from 20 years ago.
Yeah, and then I think about things that I did get rid of and I'm so upset.
Like,
and
what?
Like a Juicy Couture sweatsuit that I bought in high school because Britney Spears' wedding party wore them. And I'm like, why did I get rid of that? I should have had that forever. It's so, that's...
To wear or just to own?
To both. To wear as a joke and to own as a freak.
Huh.
Like, why do I...
Why am
I
so upset?
Why do I still think about it? Why am I on eBay trying to find it? That's pathetic.
Why are you, though? Did you figure it out? What do you think?
I don't know.
You don't?
Do you know? Can you answer?
I'm trying to think what that feeling is.
Well, I just want... It was mine,
right.
And I want it. And now it's gone.
Huh. Because, like, I'm trying to think, like, why, like, I have literally got 20, 30-year-old t-shirts mm-hmm. that have just kept moving. I don't wear them anymore because a lot of them are just falling apart or they're just not part of my personality anymore. But, like, they represent something. They represent a different version of me or some part of me, like, part of my evolution. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where would they go if I didn't have them? Like, I imagine someone else would wear them. But there are shirts that I had to wear over and over again because I had to wear them.
Because it's all you had.
No, because you know they were what I was wearing. Like, I commit pretty heavy to pants, shoes, shirts. I have a lot of fucking stuff, but at any given time, I'm only rotating two or three things.
I'm so curious about your old t-shirts now. Are they cool? I like want them. They
really?
Sound cool.
Okay. I mean, I'll find you one.
Okay.
Do you wear t-shirts? Or you look like you're not
t-shirts.
The same Esther that I knew.
I so am. I'm wearing jeans and a flannel.
But you look put together, tucked in.
That's how bad I am. You're talking about your old stuff, and I'm like, I want it.
I want to go
that's
through your
pathetic.
Old stuff. You want to go through my old stuff? Here, like, look at this. This is a good example, and this just happens to be in here because the guy who's fixing my house, I just remembered this. You know, found these in some cabinet. These are original Cobb's Comedy Club t-shirts.
Those are cool.
Like this is probably from the 90s. And like, I would wear these constantly. It's not too over the top. It doesn't demand too much attention.
Yeah.
It's black with white lettering. It's kind of unique.
Yeah.
You know, it represents, it's sort of like a team shirt. Like, I'm a comic.
Yeah, I guess it was weird to me because I can't imagine wearing a Comedy Store t-shirt every day. That would feel weird to me.
Oh, I used to because I was a doorman.
Right.
We had to wear them.
Yeah.
Do they still have to wear them?
I think so.
Oh, look, I forgot this shirt. This is a good shirt. Iggy and the Stooges shirt. I didn't forgot I even had this. Why am I not wearing this all the time?
I think what you have on now is better.
Yeah, that's what happened. I got out of t-shirts.
Yeah.
I literally decided like I can't wear stuff that has anything on it.
Why? Because it's like juvenile?
No, because like I got to really, it's got to be graphically satisfying and I have to believe in whatever I have on my shirt. And I think that like at my age of 54, if I'm walking around with a black Iggy and the Stooges shirt, that's sort of like, there's something kind of tragic about that, especially with black jeans.
That is so real. Yeah, that is, there is something tragic about that. Wow, you're right. I think stick with what you're doing, it's good.
Yeah, like occasionally, like there's a couple shirts that I have that like I'll commit to like one or two things with things on them, like a permanent record shirt I wear sometimes.
I spent $100 on a limited edition Guess jeans and a Nicole Smith t-shirt, and I'm just like, what's wrong with me?
Well, yeah, but is she's not on it. It's just
she's
like,
on it. It's a giant t-shirt with a picture of her.
Giant?
Yeah, it's too big.
How much she spend?
$100.
And what are you going to do with it? Sleep in it?
I don't know. I mean, I love Anna Nicole Smith and I saw it and I was like, take my money. But now I just feel like a chump.
What about her?
What about her what?
Why do you love her?
Because she's gorgeous and like trash that made it to the top and then had a tragic end. It's just really fascinating.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's your jam?
A little bit. Part of my jam. I also like Brittany Murphy. And so, I mean, dead celebrities are attractive to me.
Seriously?
Yeah.
You ever go to the cemetery?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a cemetery written into one of our episodes coming up. But yeah, I think it comes from being a lonely child. Were you an only child?
No.
So I felt I was a lonely child.
But I'm fascinated with certain dead celebrities.
Well, tell me if you relate to this.
Okay.
So when you're like a lonely kid and you don't have family members who want to hang out with you, you're sitting at home, I felt drawn towards dead people because like I could have ownership over them and could think about them and feel like, I don't know, like I could control my relationship with them and think about them and have them in my life.
Really?
Is that too crazy?
No, I'm just trying to understand the logic of it. So you're not saying only child, you're saying lonely child.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is fascinating about dead celebrities, but I used to be pretty fascinated with old black and white film stars. You know, most of them
like
are dead.
Who?
Well, I used to just be fascinated with the pictures of them. You know, even like Charlie Chaplin, Fatty Arbuckle. You know, like I had these books with all these. I didn't even know the movies, but there was something about Hollywood and black and white, and that they were all dead, and that it was so, you know, glamorous and weird, but it was still sort of sordid and fucked up.
Yeah,
yeah, it just creeped.
Yeah.
Right, it was like it was almost prophetic that I ended up at the Comedy Store with that weird ass, you know, wallpaper that they had in the bathrooms in the back hallway with like, you know, Eddie Cantor on it and, you know, Ben Turpin and all these weird old, you know, Laurel and Hardy. Remember that wallpaper?
Of course I do.
Yeah. Like, I think she had that shit made. You can't find it anymore. I think Eric tried to find it again. It's nowhere to be found.
Is it not there at all anymore?
No, it's gone. Those bathrooms are gone. Like those two back bathrooms in the hallway, gone. And all that wallpaper in the green room upstairs.
Oh, like
bamboo.
The jungle? Yeah.
Yeah, it's gone.
I know, that's sad. Man, you know, that's what happened in the last 3 or 4 years, which is a good thing because the store is thriving and there's audiences there, which is not something I'm used to. But like doors that were always open started to be locked.
Yeah, because freaks got in there. They started letting all this riffraff in with the produce shows upstairs, I guess.
Yeah.
And people were fucking things up because comics are animals.
Yeah, but that was like kind of the fun of it.
The best.
Yeah.
It was the best. When you could go up into those hallways and you get up to the locked door and be like, what's in there?
Yeah.
The offices. Or you're like,
Mitzi's office. Oh my God. I made it in there once. So funny.
Now it's so sad. It's just boxes.
Oh,
I don't even know if they've cleaned it out yet.
But it was like being a kid and going to somebody's house and their parents were gone and you could just do whatever you wanted.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So you get out of high school. Did you go to college?
I did. I went to the University of Illinois in Champaign for 2.5 years, and then I dropped out and moved. That's when I moved here.
Was that dramatic?
I did not like college, so
what happened?
A
what went
bit.
Wrong?
A lot. I just was at the wrong school. I couldn't quite find a major. I always thought I was going to be a dancer. I started out as a dance major.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you dance?
Yeah, I did. And then
I saw a little with the West Side Story.
Oh, yeah. Now I just try to pathetically integrate it into the show. But I just couldn't fit in. I did not do the sorority thing. I mean, that's a Big Ten school. Everybody's into the sports and the sororities yeah, and fraternities right. and the partying and the drinking. And
yeah.
I just was so unhappy there. And it made it even harder that everyone around me was so happy and enjoying it so much. And so I just eventually was like, I have to quit.
But you weren't depressed. You were just reasonably unhappy.
I don't know. I'm not
were
sure.
Were you like, but did you,
I was,
did you get lumpy and just never get out of bed? And
I gained a lot of weight.
Really?
Yeah. I gained an unrecognizable Esther amount of weight. And
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I have, like, I love eating because I don't do anything else. Food is like my, you know,
right.
my fun zone,
yeah.
if you will. So,
what would you do? You'd be sad just sitting in your room, your dorm room, eating what?
That's such an intimate question. So many things. I don't know. Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tarts.
Cold Stone. A lot of desserts.
Oh, Cold Stone. I don't love Cold Stone.
I don't love it now, but it was right around the corner from where I lived.
Yeah,
so.
Because the ice cream itself, I don't think has much flavor.
Yeah.
If you don't mix in. And I kind of like straight ice cream sometimes.
I like one mix in if we're talking
which
Cold
one?
Stone. A brownie.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with like a sweet cream and a brownie.
That's right. It is just basically sweet cream ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, I like a peanut butter cup mix in myself.
What is your plain ice cream that you like that doesn't have a mix in?
You know, I grew to like vanilla.
I love vanilla.
Yeah.
That's always, well, cookies and cream or cookie dough would go above vanilla now, but vanilla as a base
yeah.
is everything. I don't
right.
like the
yeah.
fancy colored and.
Like, No. You got to work with a vanilla base or a sweet cream base.
Yeah.
I grew up, when I was younger, I was sort of chocolate driven. But then as I got older, I got more into vanilla. I like the mint cookie. That was pretty good. Was it Ben and Jerry did a mint cookie?
Oh my God. Yeah. It's a mint. Is that the name of it?
Something, I don't remember.
But it has, yeah.
It's
I know
like
exactly
mint,
what you're talking
mint
about.
Mint ice cream with the cookies.
Yeah.
And that's all that's in it. That's pretty great when he would find a big piece of cookie.
I know. And just you're digging through and
yeah,
looking
like
for it.
Stirring it around as it melts. You kind of turn the big ball of it over to find the
That's it's so like just so I'm almost uncomfortable talking about this because I just feel disturbing.
I'm very compulsive food, but it's very hard for me to manage.
Yeah,
but like thank God, you know, I have my cholesterol got a little out of hand, so it becomes about life or death, and then you're sort of like, all right, no more. I can't pint out.
How did you? Well, do you ever buy the pints that are like the cheating pints where it's only 360 calories for one pint? Halo Top. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean once or twice that came later in the game for me.
Yeah,
you know, like I would to sit down and do. I've gone through different Ben and Jerry's flavors. I don't like Haagen-Dazs because it's not good on my. It's too rich.
I don't like it.
I don't like it.
They just don't have. Fun flavors like the way Ben and Jerry's does.
Right, but it's almost too rich. Like, it's almost hard to do a whole pint of Haagen-Dazs. But for some reason, like, I can do a whole pint of Ben and Jerry's, no problem.
I haven't in a while, thank God. I'm clean. But I've done like one and a half.
Yeah,
and then
me too.
When you look at the ingredients, and it's just so, it's like all just disturbing.
Well, I used to
egg
get,
yolks. And,
well, yeah, but that's what makes it good.
I know.
But like I used to get a pint of vanilla and then a fancy flavor and so cut it with the vanilla.
Wow.
I used to do a whole bit about that. You got to get the cut.
I remember one night one of my friends came over with two pints and I acted as though both were for me.
But you know what? But I used to do the thing where I'd like play this game with myself where you're like, I'm just going to eat a little bit and then you put it back. Like,
yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
What other stuff though? Like what did...
ice
Pop Tarts is
huge.
Pretty good. I could see Pop Tarts, but like it was not like I wouldn't think to do it. I'd be like, I can't do Pop Tarts.
Yeah, that was like obviously freshman year of college me. I wouldn't do that in the last decade.
Right.
I guess that was in the same decade, but or no, it wasn't.
I like almond cake, olive oil cake, ricotta cheesecake.
No, that's almost more mature.
No, I know, but I can't get that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I can't. I mean, I'm not getting it, but like when I since I don't eat a lot of desserts now, if it's a fancy dessert, that's where I'll do that shit.
My favorite dessert flavor profile is s'mores. So anything that has like those three tastes, I go for.
Marshmallow, graham cracker,
and chocolate.
Yeah. Didn't they make a flavor? Ben and Jerry's flavor? S'mores.
I think they did. If I might have been a chocolate base, which I'm not, I can't do.
What would you prefer? Marshmallow base? How would you, what base would you use?
Oh, vanilla sweet
with
cream.
That stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Pop-Tarts, yeah, I wouldn't do that nowadays. But like in college, I would eat a box of Pop-Tarts and take a Benadryl. Like that's bad.
To go to sleep?
Yeah. That's weird. That's well, not, you're, why I'm not there anymore.
You're kind of circling drugs.
Yeah.
How can I do this without doing drugs?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like Catholic girls who don't go all the way, but right. They do the other things. Because I always.
So you were like, some Catholic girls will do anal sex.
Yeah. That's what I was doing. I was eating Pop-Tarts and Benadryl.
Not doing cocaine or speed.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you get it because I feel like people don't understand. They're like, oh, you just ate everybody. Like, this was dark, abusive behavior I was engaging in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's because I didn't want to drink alcohol for a lot of reasons, but one of them was I always knew in the way I treated food and desserts, like, I can't take it to the next level of something even more fun.
Yeah.
I'll be all the bad things.
Yeah, exactly. You knew you had the possibility, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. Like, I think about it now. What was I just thinking? Just about that. Like, because I don't know how. Like, I have to stop and look at how fast I'm eating something sometimes. Like, I will just shovel shit. Like,
oh, my God.
Like, just shovel. Like,
wait, I was in New York doing press for the show, and I had finished, like, a thing that I was happy to have had done.
Yeah.
And I went to my hotel room, and I room serviced a pizza, a pasta, a dessert, a bunch of stuff.
Did you have a per diem?
Like, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I'm not joking you, I was drinking the pizza. I was eating it so fast. I'm like, I'm drinking this. There's no other way to explain it. And my stomach was so bad for like a week after. It was a bad.
Oh,
but it was, that's all I wanted to do after.
Free food too, like buffets and shit. I got a real problem with that.
Oh, I have a no buffet. Who are buffets for?
I don't know.
It's for people to really hurt themselves or what, someone who's going to go in a manageable way.
How do you handle craft services? Like, I'm so happy I'm done shooting Glow because I couldn't take it anymore. And then I would think, like, no one's going to eat this. How are there still stuff here? And then, like, they had donuts.
Yeah. No, I know. There's donuts every morning at the shows I work on. It's you have to be black and white. For me, it's like I just don't touch the table and I bring my own thing and I go do my own thing. Because once I have a bite of something, my mind is like, oh my God, what's next? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh yeah, or half a donut.
Half a donut is so off the limits. Like that's insane to me if you eat half a donut at work. That's crazy. What, that's like, the equivalent of a bump of Coke or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Just not enough. And just to keep circling, hoping that the other half got left and went away.
Yeah, you'll be thinking about it and feeling yucky.
All right, so you leave college after 2 years?
2.5 years, halfway through my junior
year. And you just decide to go to California? That's fucking crazy.
What year
was that?
That was 2009.
So like I just met you when you just got there, give or take a half a year?
Like give or take a month.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I moved in April and I went the next week I was at the Comedy Store and I was there full time.
But how did you end up, how did that all happen? Like what was, so you leave college and you're like, I'm going to the Comedy Store?
No, so I leave college and I'm out with, like the first week I was here, I was out at a bar, Luna Park Bar, which I don't think is there anymore. It was like La Brea and Wilshire where I was living. And I was with a friend of mine. I had one friend out here and we were just kind of laughing, having fun. And I don't even remember what it was, but I was making fun of him. And the bar owner was like, you're so funny, which no one has said that to me since this, but you're so funny. You should do stand up. I'm like, wait, I tried stand up in college. Like, yeah, I should. That's what I want to do. And I'm like, but I don't know how, where. And she's like, the Comedy Store. And then that was it.
Wow.
Then it was like, call the Comedy Store, drop off a resume. How do I get a job here? I remember being on the front patio and I'm like, who do I talk to about getting a job here? I can't get in touch with anyone. Like, no one's responding to me. And then someone goes, well, Pauly Shore owns it. And I'm like, okay, who's that? And they're like, because I didn't know who he was. They're like, oh, that's him over there. And so I walk up to him and I'm like, hi, I'm trying to get a job as like a waitress. And he just like, he grabs my arm and he's like, look at you, you're like a little doll. And he walks me over to Tommy and he's just like, look at this little doll. And then he walks away. And then that was it. Then I never got hired, but I think Tommy says that that was Polly, like through Mitzi, showing him that like we should pay attention to this person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Tommy like tripped out on it.
Yeah.
Oh,
which
wow.
Which is very strange.
That's good, man. That's a nice, mystical, very connected Comedy Store experience.
Yeah. They didn't hire women to do anything other than waitress at that time, and I wasn't qualified enough to be a waitress. So
but you,
I
was you, just a, you knew you were home?
Yeah, I was just a hanger on her, and I was, yeah.
And you would just show up.
Yeah. I mean, I would do open mics every day.
You did an open mic in college, yeah?
I did 2 open mics in college, yeah. But then when I got to LA, I would do the store, obviously, Sunday, Monday. It used to be Sunday and Monday. And then I would do open mics wherever I could go. And then at the end of my open mics, I would go to the store every night. And I'd watch, sit in the back in the bucket seats and watch the show and then talk to people. And
you're like a hardcore store.
I know.
Hardcore store person.
Isn't that like gross?
No, because it's not going to always be, they're not going to be anymore.
Yeah.
It's not always going to be this way. It's over in a way.
It is. I agree, because it's, the doors are locked, you know? But yeah, that also when I moved to LA, there wasn't, you couldn't develop anywhere. No one was developing young comedians.
Right.
That wasn't happening at the Improv or the Factory or anywhere.
And, no one cared. They were just sort of doing like, you know, be doing produced shows.
Yeah, but the store was still kind of doing that. But mind you, it wasn't cool to be at a comedy club. And it's, I don't know if it is now, but
it kind of is now.
Yeah, that's a nice turn, because then you wanted to be on the East Side. Like you said, do UCB. You wanted to be at the cool.
It's so funny because I told you that and I was like I'm a store person, like, you know, through my soul.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and I was trying at that time. I was just doing those other rooms to make sure that I was, you know, relevant in that world.
Huh.
And now like I don't like, because I, you know, I just thought that was what needed to be done at that time. But I was always a club comic. So now, like, I don't do any of those rooms. I only do the store.
I kind of am there, too. I only do the store.
You know, I think that my advice to you was sort of like, I it wasn't that I misread you. It was just sort of like, I had been eaten up by the store once. I just was trying to, because the place eats people.
I cannot tell you how much your advice made perfect sense. It was the perfect right advice.
But you found your way.
I did, but still, like when you just are looking at the situation and you see a 21-year-old girl who's like just smiling, like send her away from the store. If I saw that, yeah. I would give the same advice to this day. I would say, get out of here.
Yeah.
Go to UCB. I mean.
But now, like, I don't even know what's going on at UCB. And, like, that's a whole other world. The thing is it's like, you know, I still think in some weird way that, you know, to be, you know, a stand-up, like, to really do it, you know, the store is where you do it.
Yeah, but also that's such a hard system to get into. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I love, well, that's, like we said, it's very good now. There's crowds.
So, all right, so you come out here and now you're hanging around the store with the freaks. But that was the charm of that place. It was always sort of like, it always attracted just broken people.
Yeah.
Of all different kinds. You know, some criminal, some just, you know, weird. But it's sort of back. There's sort of an electricity there, but they don't let a lot of freaks hang out too much, but there's still a lot of weirdness.
You think?
Yeah.
I'm not there as much, so I don't know. But
when I work, if I stay around, just like when you get that many people hovering in this sort of mythology of the place, like, and I started talking about it constantly, and a lot of us started talking about it in a very proactive way.
Mm.
And it's just all of a sudden people are like, it's like the real deal.
That's crazy. Because that's how I felt when I was there. This is the real deal. But the outside world was
like this
no,
creep show.
This
They're
is like nothing.
No, it's a haunted house.
You're performing for Australian tourists who are jet lagged, who don't care. And otherwise, there's nobody there. It was just so awful when I got there.
Yeah, the industry turned on it.
Yeah, why?
Because it got weird and gross.
Right. Yeah, no one from the industry wanted to be there.
Never.
It was awful.
Never.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. It's like, if you need to be seen by someone, you do it at the Improv.
But that was the great thing, is that like when the lunatics run the asylum, you could work without being seen. You needed a place
exactly.
to work.
Yeah.
You know, when I got there in the 2000s, whenever I came, like, it was pretty beat up. It was just starting to turn, but you could still do your shit anonymously.
The craziest thing too is that the thing that's written on the below the cover booth, like just be yourself.
In God we trust.
Like that is such a great, I don't know, guidance.
Is it? I never even noticed that.
Yeah, it's. I don't know the exact quote, but it's something about like don't try to be funny, just be yourself, and
really?
That really led me to. Yeah,
it's right under the OR cover booth.
Yeah, maybe it's gone now, but it was there for many years.
I never noticed it.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's there. I hope it's there. I hope it's there now. Because that was like, you were reading all the signs and symbols. Like there was part of me that had to, you know, compartmentalize that stuff, you know, because when I was at the store and I was out of my mind on coke and I was sort of like mentally unstable, you know, it really broke into quite a large, you know, system of signs and meanings. Like, you know, I was out there. So like, you know, being at the store was like the center of the universe. And there was a constant battle between good and evil going on there in my mind. And like, it was really like, so it was like the imprinting of that place from a cocaine psychotic mind.
Oh my God.
It took so long to shake it. It took so long for me to be able to go to the store and not feel the thing. You know, like, oh, the energy's still here kind of shit.
Yeah.
So like, I kind of got rid of that. And then I kind of appreciated it on a nuts and bolts level. But, you know, that energy, you know, goes all the way back to, you know, the zeros. And like, so you can play that game, right?
The what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, the force, man.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is. You know, Hollywood, the force, the comedy store. Like, who, you know, what happened here? Who is Mitzi?
I haven't heard Ciro's thrown around in a while. That does bring me back to, like, the stories about the illegal abortions performed below the main room.
Oh, yeah, the ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now there's a podcast studio.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Downstairs in the basement. I don't know what's under the main room.
Yeah, I never had a ghost experience there, I don't think.
No, I didn't either. But like, you know, like I have to be careful, like not to drift. You know, like there was a lot of mystics around, you know, earlier on, you know, from after the 70s. You know, after Libitkin jumped off the fucking building,
right.
The shit just broke open. And, you know, it became like this this kind of drain for like, you know, mysticism and weirdness revolving around that place.
Yeah, I there's something about that I'm very drawn to.
Oh, yeah.
It's so exciting.
Right, there's that. And now it's just sort of like the authenticity of the place, you know, just on a surface level is very compelling. You know, it's cool to sit in those rooms because they are relatively unchanged.
What else is the same
nothing.
As it was
nothing.
50 years? Yeah.
That's what I mean, is that it's a real deal place and real deal comics work there. And a lot of guys who haven't worked there in forever and women come back. You know, they're back, you know, they're kind of like, ugh. You know, they ran away from that place and now they're kind of back.
Man, that makes me scared that because there'd always be people talking about how like, oh, this is going to get sold and become a parking lot. And
that's not happening.
Yeah. Okay.
Not anytime soon.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, that was the fear. I don't think that's happening. I don't want to get into Shore family business.
Right. You probably know much more than I do.
I don't know. I don't want to get in the middle of that shit. So, all right.
Know.
So, did you go to Polly's birthday last night?
No, how was it? Did you go?
Well, I was doing spots. I kind of dropped by. It was all right. There's a lot of old timers there.
That's like the kind of thing that I would stay away from because I still feel like it's a toxic relationship with the store.
Yeah.
And there's certain
right, that's what I'm
people
saying.
I don't want to go back and mm-hmm. be around and be reminded how I feel around them and the people that would show up to that. I'm saying like you just don't know what you're getting. And so for me right now, I love this store, but I have a very adult relationship with it. I show up for my set, and if there's a few friends there, I hang, but I leave.
Yeah.
Because I don't, like you said, it's like you go there and you feel all the things that you once felt, and I'm like, I don't want to feel those things. I want
to
just...
Yeah, I used to say like going back there to work was like, you know, going to visit the place, the person I got that molested me.
Yeah.
I don't remember how I put it. I put it better. But it seems like over the years, like, you know, you've sort of, you know, gotten acting gigs and you've been able to do your stand-up on TV shows and you've worked a lot.
Yeah, I've been trying.
You got a recurring on the, which show?
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
That's big?
Yeah, I love that show. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
And you got to do stand-up on, did you do stand-up on Seth's show?
No, I just went on Seth's to promote Alone Together. That was
So you did panel?
Yeah.
Did bits?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I have.
How'd they go?
I have a surveillance camera in my family's living room, and so I showed pictures from that, and I think that was fun. I think people liked it.
You do?
Yeah.
What, do they know it?
Yeah. It was started out to so I could see the dogs sleeping at night, uh-huh. and then it just like became a way to make fun yeah. of my family.
And you were on Maria's show for an episode.
Oh, yeah. Maria's like why I started doing stand-up.
Really?
Yeah.
She would never do the Comedy Store.
No, no. But I mean, because I went.
Maybe she would.
High school went to the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, and I'd never seen stand up live before. And one of my friends was like, "Oh, this person's really funny. Let's go." I'm like, "Sure." And it was Maria, and I mean, changed me forever. Was the funniest. Talk about like looking for someone who could have a strong.
Oh yeah, she's the best.
Yeah.
It's like a savant.
I was like, well, I don't know what this is, but I want this. This yeah. is good.
She's great.
Yeah.
So that really, so you had your mind-blowing experience, the cathartic, you know, revelation. Was it with Bamford in Scotland?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, it was, yeah.
Did you tell her that?
I did. Yeah, I did.
And she went, oh, okay.
Yeah, she was. She's so awesome. She's, yeah, I mean, you know, she's yeah. the nicest, funniest person that there ever was.
What did you do on her show?
I played a teenager who was asking her for comedy advice because our moms are friends and basically end up telling her like that she's not funny and that I'm really funny and my friends think at school think I'm funny.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
I gotta watch this show. I gotta make time to watch it.
Her show's worth it. It's
oh
so
yeah
good.
I love her so much. I think I watched one episode, but like I just gotta lock in. And are you doing a podcast?
Yeah, I now have I had my podcast, which you did, which was yeah. really fun. And
what was it called again?
Weird Adults.
Yeah, right.
And then now I'm doing like a female, like we talk about makeup, diet, exercise, beauty, self-care, called Glowing Up, that I co-host with one of the writers on my show, Caroline Goldfarb.
What? Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And it's real?
What do you mean?
It's a real advice show or a struggle show?
Yeah, like we talk about.
The struggle?
It's very, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Why do I have to do this?
Why am I not that?
Why am I
still trying to be that? Yeah.
And what happened? Did you do one with Brody?
Brody and I had a podcast way back in the day with Red Band. We had a podcast called Brodiness that we did right after his big breakdown. He kind of needed some.
How was that?
It was fun. It was like, you know.
What was your relationship with that whole crew? Like, how did you end up with what is it called? What's Red Band's
Death Squad?
Death Squad. Yeah. How'd you end up with the Rogan Red Band Matrix?
I was dating Red Band for a little while after Tony and I broke up.
Yeah.
And then we started hanging out, and then we broke up. We were not together very long. And then after we broke up, the Brody and Esther thing happened.
But you were doing Joe's show? Like Joe had you on a few
times?
Yeah,
I went with Joe. I went to Austin with him and did a couple of things like that.
What, stand-up?
Yeah.
And that was good?
It was good, yeah. He was a really great dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, before we wrap it up, how did this show get made? So people who have hopes and dreams, so help some little girls get their shows made.
Oh,
Esther.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So my best friend and I, we just decided we were at the premiere party of Brody Stevens' Comedy Central show, and someone came up to us.
Brody Stevens?
Yeah, he had a Comedy Central show that Zach Galifianakis produced.
When was that?
When was that? Like 6 years ago? Something.
Oh, right,
like
Brody.
That.
Okay, yeah.
And someone came up to us and they were just like, you guys are so weird, like you two or something.
You and Benji?
Yeah, because people would always comment on us, why aren't you dating? What, you know?
He's your best friend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we, that night, we like, okay, we're going to make something. We got to just make
something.
His
last name is Aflalo?
Aflalo.
Aflalo.
Yeah.
Benji Aflalo. I've watched him do stand-up a few times. He's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he also has the darkness.
He does,
inside
yeah.
of him, for sure. And then we decided to make a short film, and that took fucking forever to figure out because we were just two stand-up comics,
yeah.
no idea, and eventually we figured it out,
mm-hmm.
and so we shot that, and then we cut it down to like a little 2-minute version and sent it around, and then got a meeting at Lonely Island's company, and then they decided they'd want to make it with us. So then from there we pitched it.
Oh, okay. With them behind you.
Yeah.
You pitched it with them.
Yes.
At networks.
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. You kind of need someone to vouch for you, I think.
Well, no, it definitely makes it, you know, you can get into rooms.
Yeah.
Did Andy have anything to do with it? Did you meet with him?
We've met with him a few times.
Andy Samberg?
Yeah, but he, you know, they're good producers in the sense that they let us do what we wanted to do. And
yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
And who's writing on it?
It's me, Benji. Our co-creator is this guy, Eben Russell, and we have this woman, Amy Hubbs, Caroline Goldfarb, Shelley Gossman, Alex Blagg. Those are our writers this year.
Not comics?
Who's a comic in there? No comics in there this year. No.
A lot of women?
Yeah, a lot of women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still doing your show?
No.
No, because you're on Glow.
I'm on Glow. Yeah. A lot of women.
Yeah.
It's just me and a lot of women.
That's so, do you feel like at home, like that's how it's supposed to be for you? Because you have a very like feminine
do I?
Energy. I mean, the way you talk about food is... makes me feel safe.
Well, that's the weird balance with me. You know,
yeah.
I have some, there's part of me that, you know, through defensiveness and hypersensitivity has gotten kind of callous. And there's a type of manliness that I can manifest, you know, that I think I used to protect myself for years. But I think the core is a little more. Yeah. Yeah. I used to do a joke about that, mm-hmm. about having an inner girl. Her name's Jill and she has an eating disorder. Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware of all that.
Yeah,
yeah,
that makes sense.
But I do, like, the other thing's pretty real too. You know, that's the weird thing about me is that whatever sort of alpha component I have, whatever sort of assholeness I have,
uh-huh.
is pretty toxic and pretty male. But like, I think at the, you know, the other one's winning now. So.
Oh, that's good. Why do you think that is? How did that happen?
Because, like, you know, you have to, after a certain point, I think what you're trying to do is be true to yourself and be comfortable with yourself. So bringing those things together or allowing that stuff to live as opposed to stuff that stuff down. That process, you know, when you don't have good parents, it takes forever. So, you know, you're sort of finding yourself, you're comfortable with yourself much later, you know, if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to battle the defensive part of me.
Yeah. What? I do too.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this resonating with you?
It is, because I also feel like I have that toxic male side of me, but it's not really that, my version of that,
yeah,
which
right.
is like defensive and, you know, right. yeah, defensive is probably the biggest.
And mean.
And yeah.
With me, like if I get defensive, I'll be preemptively hostile and hurtful.
Yeah. You know what is the
bullying?
The most specific example of this I have is that. Because when you move to LA, you're like, you know, you're in show business and you're just, I don't know, I wasn't really the person I was growing up because now I was just like having fun trying to make it, right?
Yeah.
And so I did Last Comic Standing and one of the judges was Norm Macdonald and he said something kind of mean to me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting that because the producers were like, they're going to be nice. They're like, this is not like American Idol. This is, you know.
Yeah.
Which... I guess that's what they told us, but they told the judge or something different. Because now Norm and I have talked about it, and he's like, yeah. And he said something mean to me, and...
What?
I don't even remember. It was not even that big of a deal. But he just said something that caught me off guard, and then, like, the real unplanned person inside of me came out. And I, like, went off on him and was so, like... I
on
just,
camera?
Yeah. I went off on him, and it was... It never aired, but... And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's a person inside of me I forgot about. And I think that was, I just remembered that, like, if my uncle said something that pissed me off, like, that's how I would react. And that's just what happened and came up. And I hadn't seen that person since I had moved out here. And so, yeah, I guess, there's someone in me that wants to be like, don't you fucking talk to me like that.
Right.
At all times.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's normal when you... Like if like however you are emotionally diminished by selfish parents, right? If you have to do your growing up sort of on your own,
uh-huh.
put yourself together, right? Like the only real defining part of your personality when you're that vulnerable is fuck you.
Yeah.
That's what's going to protect you until you get it together.
Yeah. That makes me feel so much better that you can kind of explain it. Because I am like, why am I so ready to just... Don't talk. Like, why am I ready to
Because we defend. Weren't given any, you know, we weren't grounded properly.
Like, what's the normal reaction? Just to be quiet and think about it.
No,
like,
no, I don't know if it's to be quiet.
But I hear what you're saying. Like, is that right?
No, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, it's a sensitivity, you know, that, you know, if you weren't properly capped emotionally as a child, you know, you sort of still have very childish emotions. Mm. So you're going to respond like that. No, you are. Right?
Yeah.
Because, like, no one gave you the emotional cocoon to develop a sense of self that was based in confidence or self-esteem. So you're still kind of like, there's still that flailing, you know, 5-year-old.
Yeah.
You're like, nah, nah, nah. But now, you know, I'm 54. It's very unattractive. You know, what 5-year-old emotions coming to a 54-year-old's brain can do.
That's so funny. Wow. That's so funny.
Right?
Yeah. No, that's right. That's I'm embarrassed.
I know. I feel that too. And like, it's weird because I feel a little bit coming out lately, you know, because things are going good and everything's all right. But like, you know, now I've got time off and I'm working on new stand-up and I'm just saying shit about people. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? You don't need to slag anybody.
Do you mean like on air? Or
No, just like in conversations, yeah. You know, like, fuck that guy. Like, yeah. But, you know, and that's one of the things you learn, you know, as time goes on, that stuff doesn't play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are just dozens of people that hear you say, fuck that guy, and they want to be like, you know, Maron, you know. So, like, you know, it's just there's a fucking wildfire to it. But I'm projecting a little bit. But I have to be very, very aware. There's no reason for me to be bitter, and there's no reason for me to be shitty about other people.
Yeah.
So like, but it is sort of an old habit.
You're so right. Yeah. Cause I'm like, why I'm bitter about something right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can I be bitter? Like I moved here with nothing. And even if this is as far as I go, having two seasons of a show that I created and star in, like I should be so happy. There should be not one sense of bitterness or unhappiness.
Right.
But why is there one thing that's like, fuck that? Like,
yeah.
I'm so, like, yeah. You're wrong.
Well, that's
bitch.
The, yeah.
Like,
well, that's the shit you gotta keep to yourself.
Yeah, which
you
I do.
Suck that shit. Well,
I
good.
Sure do.
Oh, good. Good.
And my therapist.
Keep that up. Good talking to you. Congratulations on all your success, Esther.
Same. Thanks so much, Mark.
Okay, that's our show. I loved catching up with her. I love her. She's great. I'll play 3 chords. I'll probably repeat myself. We'll see where it goes. But I like it. I like playing. I need to change the strings on my Stratocaster. I know. Boomer lives!